Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter. And hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Stu and the Nun. Tonight, episode 29. And I am joined by my good friend and kind of part-time co-host. I've been doing this a few times. My good buddy, the Shard. What's up, Shard?
Hey, Troy. How are you doing? It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for filling in for our my missing cohort.
Hey, man, I'm going to start putting this on my resume as a special skill.
I think you could have it down as an additional duty, to be quite honest.
Additional duty. Multi-hatted. Yeah, like being, you know, platoon leader and then, Lieutenant Mullen, you're now the NBC officer, and NBC stands for Nobody Cares. So,
yeah.
Yes.
That's you.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think you could put this down. You can put me as a reference.
All right.
On your hosting. You have a good radio voice.
You do? Yeah.
I think you have a better radio face, but you have a good radio voice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what all the chicks and sadly some dudes think too. So thank you. I appreciate it.
No, you got the hair that I don't have. But hey, welcome to the show and welcome to our listeners that are here tuning in tonight for episode 29. I'm very glad to have you with me, Shard, and everyone else. Toby is off, you know. The dude is so lucky. I mean, he's got a lot of skills and talent.
He does.
He got invited to. Yeah, he's talking to. I got the team wrong earlier. I was talking to you, but he's talking to the AHL, American Hockey League Texas All Stars. He's a guest speaker talking about leadership, and probably some other topics.
I think it's fantastic. Not only that he, you know, has access or gets into situations like that, but he's such a good, you know, person for that for multiple reasons, but especially for folks like that who kind of have like a non-military exposure as far as we know. So I think it's great on many, many, many fronts that he's able to do such things.
Yeah. In fact, that reminds me, I need to get another good friend of mine I served with. He's now a sergeant major in the National Guard, and he is partnered up with some gentlemen, and they have a company, which that's what they do. He goes to like professional baseball teams and hockey and football teams, and they get hired to come in there and run like leadership courses and things
right.
Like that. Everything. Yeah. And he does it on the side. They've got a great company that they run doing that. I just kind of popped in my head. I need to get a hold of him so we can get him booked. I think it'd be a great story.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Probably like team building stuff, but you know, probably more. Yeah. Yeah. More
probably a little bit more than what we had in the Army when, you know, you're given a 2x4, some chicken wire, and a roll of duct tape and a wooden dowel and said, make it over that obstacle.
Yeah, better known as a leadership reaction course. Mm-hmm. Yes. God, those are awesome. Yes. You had to measure everything, lay it out, and you had to inspect your equipment.
We were doing Jenga before Jenga was cool.
That's right. Yeah, you had to assign teams and stuff. Yep, that's good stuff, though. I mean, really, you know, it's good for the basics, and, you know, they're hitting a lot of things, and, you know, maybe it was kind of corny when you're in the Army, but, you know, probably definitely with civilians, that's pretty high-speed stuff. You know, they might have to crawl through water and stuff, you know. Stuff like that. Get dirty.
Right. And speaking of bringing military experience and stuff, a nice segue here, bringing military experience and stuff to the civilian front, sort of the civilian front. Tonight's guest, he is an active Guard Reserve, AGR we call him. He's a National Guard member of Vermont National Guard, but he is a full-time active duty member, Captain Zach Fike. And Zach is going to be on. He is the founder and CEO of a nonprofit called Purple Hearts Reunited, which was introduced to this show and me by a longtime friend, Mitchell Taco Bell. And Taco is a retired Marine aviator and commercial airline pilot, and he teamed up with Zach, and they he got part of Purple Hearts Reunited, which I think is a phenomenal organization, 501c3, where they return lost or stolen military medals back to veterans or their families if the veterans aren't around anymore. A lot of it's in Purple Hearts. I'm not sure it's all been Purple Hearts, but so we're going to have Zach on, Doug, to talk about some of the stories. I know when we had Taco on, man, some of the stories were just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's like almost everyone's, you know, it's almost divine intervention. And not only are they finding the awards, but then they're finding who they belong to and the whole story behind them, and then getting them presented back to the families and the survivors. I mean, I think it's just so awesome. It's just sort of a transgenerational gift, really, you know, that they're providing these families and giving them things to remember them by. So it's just, I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, it's whether they actually they were lost or, you know, buried in the backyard in a box or you know, sold in the pawn shop on hard times or whatever it was, you know.
Yes.
And what's, you know, what I remember from the stories we got, the couple we had before, which I hope we're going to get many more tonight, is it was the complete path, right? It was not only how the person earned it, maybe we knew a little bit about that, how the person got received the medal or why they received it, but it was really how whoever found it came across it, for the fortitude and the drive they had to seek out and find someone to get it back to them, and then the amount of research and analytics to go to find that person. You know?
I was just going to say the whole data aggregation and the whole you know, needle in a haystack type, you know, it's almost like an exposition, or, you know, like a, it's like a journey. I mean, it's just unbelievable that they can, and some of these relatives might not even know, you know, might even be aware that what some of the relatives did, you know, and this, again, it's just sort of a family building an appreciation for country and sacrifice that these soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines have done, you know, decades ago. So it's very humbling, at least for me. I think it's outstanding.
Yeah. So you know what's not humbling is the current political landscape.
I'm sitting here in my alternate man cave forward, I guess. And so I see the non-amber rotating beacon on the Drudge Report. Trump, Clinton set for victories.
I this is what I find interesting. So I just clicked that too. The Mississippi primary results for the Democratic Party. They have Hillary is a projected winner. There's 0% for her and 0% for Bernie, but they're already calling.
I know.
That is some Nostradamus stuff there. Like, not a vote's in yet. Like, no, she's got it.
Yeah, you know, maybe they have inside information, Stu. You know, maybe they have, you know, they talk to the programmer of the voting machine. I'm sorry. I'll try not to be serious.
I mean, it's like I look to go there and see a check mark and say projected winner and it says 0-0. It's like, it's not really how that works.
You know, maybe they should wait till there's like 51% of the precincts reporting in or something just to give it some, you know,
validity?
Some more gravitas, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, whatever political persuasion is, we're 51% in, we're going to call Stu, you've won Idaho. Awesome. You know, or whatever, you know,
right.
So I don't know, but the 1% calls, I think are funny, but
zero. I mean, that's early, man. That's
well, that's funny on multiple levels. those two getting zeros, 1-0 each. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So,
So there's a lot going on there, right? We've had, you've had Christie that is now backing Trump and being his guy. Carson has dropped out, but is still very much involved.
Yep.
There's this big It's you know, we saw when the last two elections, the country definitely got split, if you would. You know, there was there was those for Obama and those everyone else. You know, it was very much a split.
Yep.
And even before that, right?
I think, with the Bush election.
Even
in
with Bush, it was people that were like anyone but Bush, right, or Bush. Now those are two different parties. Now we're in the same party, and it's like Trump, any Republican but Trump.
Yeah,
you know,
I know. And then you got on the other side, you got the hardcore, I guess, Bernie fanatics who at least say they won't vote for Hillary if she's the nominee. So it's almost, you know, it's like this weird mirror image.
Well, there's some speculation and some stories going around today that possibly, Bernie and Hillary may be teaming up.
Either that or the second choice. I don't know, two women on a ticket, but it'd be Elizabeth Warren. So it just depends on, you know. But no, I think you're right.
Two of them are talking, and a lot of it's based on like the town hall. What was that? How that went last night. But it'd be interesting. You know, so the rest of it is. You know, you got Romney, who really should keep out of it. I mean,
doing to Trump exactly what happened to him.
Today for like for two different for Rubio and for Kasich. I think he's doing robocall. He's like anyone but Trump. I mean, there's this mantra going around calling ABH, right? Anyone but Hillary. There and from the Republican, the conservative side. If you would, non-liberal Democratic side. But within the Republican Party, there's a anyone but Trump mantra going on.
Yeah. Troy, is it sort of like the entitlement mentality sort of drilled down into in each of these parties? You know, it's almost like become permeated throughout our culture now, and we just look at it through the political prism in these parties. Like, well, if I can't, you know, and these are supposed to be hardcore party fanatics, you know, like their team, they want their team, you know, Republican or Democrat, they want them to win. So, and, you know, even before being an American, so they're, you would think that, you know, but I think it's this entitlement thing. Well, you know, I can't have my guy, then heck with it. You know, I'm pick up my toys and leave. You know, I don't know. It's just an interesting, you know, psychological and moral sort of experiment almost we're doing, and just interesting for me just to sort of observe and just kind of find out what people's true motivations are. You know, you got to kind of break it on down, and you know, but you know, you have no, so you're saying Trump's ridiculous, I get it, or whatever, but you know, look what we've had the last 7 years. I mean, he's narcissistic, okay, probably not a hard sell, but look what we've had, you know. I guess, you know, and I keep, you know, I mean, I hate to be like, you know, what could go wrong? But, you know, I don't know. When we early voted here in Texas and everybody was still on the ballot here in Texas, even the guys that dropped out, and I think some of them actually still got votes, you know, people like Carson and whoever else had dropped out by then, they were still getting votes. But so I guess that's the anyone but Trump crowd, at least on the Republican side. And then I guess here's the thing that's scary, Troy, on the Democrat side, you got all this stuff about Hillary and the classified information and the non-secured server and all this. But apparently that doesn't matter if you're in the Democratic Party. You know, you're like, oh, well, you know, it's just a conspiracy or whatever, however they justify it. That's assuming they even care that much. But I'm like, man, I would care dearly. I care dearly about this stuff, regardless of who it is. You know,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I just,
well,
know,
let me take you back. Let me take you back at how short, there's people that have serious short-term memory loss, not just on the Democratic side, but on both sides. But someone put up a picture today on the Facebook. and it was a picture of I don't know what his name, Emilio Estevez or Emilio Estefan or whatever. The little Cuban kid. Remember the little Cuban kid in the closet?
Oh, yeah, when the SWAT came and Elian Gonzalez.
Oh, is that what it was? I don't know why that was Emilio.
I think it's Elian Gonzalez. Yeah, back in 2000, right? Yeah.
Like, yeah. Don't forget, it was a Democratic president in charge, that an attorney general that went in and snatched this kid out at gunpoint. How quickly you know, the Democrats forget, you know, and it was just like, I was like, oh yeah, it was not that. Oh my goodness, man. Could you imagine a conservative being a Republican being in office?
Oh my gosh! It'd be like they'd have like a war crimes tribunal started at The Hague, and like inside of a week for them. You know, I mean, yeah, you're right though. But it's selective outrage, conditional Karen. You know, like, you know, we have South by Southwest here in Austin this weekend or for the next couple of weeks, and you know, and our president's decided that's more important yet again. There's something more important to do than. You know, a former first lady's funeral or a sitting Supreme Court justice's funeral or whatever. You know, I got more important things to do, man.
Oh, hey, them Salt Lake breakfast tacos in Austin are awesome, right? Maybe he's coming
down there. I mean, but, you know, I mean, come on. I mean,
yeah, you're right. It is going on now. And,
it's again, conditional caring, selective outrage. So,
well, you know, a couple weeks ago, we had my old commander. And good friend still, ForceCom Commander General Abrams on. And he had one saying that always stuck with me and I used to this day. I mean, he had a lot of great things he did. He's a phenomenal company commander. But he taught me the term selective compliance. And I think it was when we were in Desert Storm when he taught it to me. He was talking to us. He goes, you know, I forgot what the event was or the situation, but he's like, that's selective compliance. And I remember looking at him like, selective compliance, because you comply with the rules or the regulations or whatever only when it benefits you, but you ignore them when it's not.
That's
and
exactly.
I started to apply that throughout my life, and you see it everywhere. And I never had a term. Granted, I was in my young early 20s then, but I never even thought of that until he said it. And even many times that I've linked up with him through the years when he was a 3rd ID commander or back at Hood at brigade commander, we'd talk about that and. I'm like, I've never forgot that term, selective compliance, and I've used it so many times in the military and civilian sectors. You know, people comply when they want to, when it benefits them, and they don't when it doesn't, you know?
No, and you could even transfer it to, you know, pick your religion. Let's just pick Christianity. Right. Yeah, I'll take 2 of these and 1 of those, but I don't like – it's like a la carte, right? I'll take, you know, it's like Whataburger. Sorry, that was a Texas reference, which is the best burger on the planet, but – you know, at, you know, Burger King, you know, I want it my way, right? And I'll think, no, that other stuff over there, that's a little uncomfortable. I'll just go ahead and I'll pass, you know, I'll come up with some excuse. Yeah, you see it everywhere in all manifestations of life. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Well, with that, I want to get on to our guest, Mr. Zach Fike. He is a captain in the Vermont Army National Guard as an active duty member up there, but he's not here to represent. I want to make sure that very clear. He's not here to represent the state of Vermont, the Vermont National Guard, Bernie Sanders, the U.S. Army, that stuff. He's here to talk to him about the organization he is the CEO and founder of, Purple Hearts Reunited. Like I said at the start of the show, we had his compadre, an old friend of mine, Mitchell Taco Bell, on about it. And I want to welcome to Stew and the Nun, Mr. Zach Fike. Hey, Zach, how you doing?
Good. How you guys doing down there?
Great, Zach. Good. Great to have you.
I'm this is Stu. I'm operating out of the Northern Studio in upstate New York, so I'm not too far from you. And Shard is filling in tonight. My buddy Doug is filling in for Toby from the Austin studio.
Yeah, call it the Southern Command.
Well, I have no sympathy for you in New York, but down in Texas, geez, I mean, the weather's got to be better than Vermont.
Dude, it's like 85. I walked my dogs in shorts and a T-shirt.
All right. Yeah. We're no longer friends.
There you go. There you
exactly.
go.
Well, hey, Zach, it's great to have you on. You know, you've done a lot not only in your life and career already, but you're doing a lot great with this organization. But before I get into that too much, I'd like to kind of give our listeners a little bit of your background and kind of who you are, and if you wouldn't mind, just kind of transition that into what was the event or what was the trigger in your life that made you realize that there needed to be an organization that does what Purple Hearts Reunited does.
Yeah, sure, no problem. I'm a military brat. Both my parents served. My dad ended up doing 26 years, retired command sergeant major at Fort Drum, New York.
Cool.
My mom was one of the very first female drill sergeants in the Army in the late 70s.
Wow.
That's how they actually met. They were both drill sergeants at Fort Leonard Wood. So I'm probably a barracks child. But
well, they don't call it Fort. They don't call it Fort Lawson in the Woods for nothing.
Yeah,
exactly, awesome. Exactly. But no, I was raised right, and I come from a long line of military tradition, and I carried that tradition on myself. I joined as a junior in high school, the United States Army, and I've been serving my country. I've had the great honor of doing that for the past 17 years, both as an enlisted man and as an officer now. And had a couple deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. And for me personally, when I came home from Iraq in 05, 06, you know, any soldier that goes off to war comes home a different person, you know, whether they like to admit it or not. We all kind of need an outlet, whether it's a hobby of sports or maybe a talk show. You know, for me, it was collecting antiques. And don't ask me why. I just like old things. That's why I like Mitch Taco Bell. But basically, as I started to venture into these shops, I started seeing discarded military items. I started seeing, you know, uniforms, helmets, medals. And it really broke my heart. You know, those items could have belonged to somebody in my family. And to see them just kind of discarded, I felt an urge, or I felt a calling to basically start rescuing these items. And I essentially became a military collector. My mom, who's my number one fan, in 2009, for Christmas, decided to buy me something along those lines. And within that shop, she found a posthumous Purple Heart. And she paid $100 for it. And it was kind of the big gift of the night. And as soon as I opened it, I knew what it was. And I knew right away it didn't belong to me. You know, you can't, that's just one thing that you can't collect. You know, it's our nation's oldest medal, and it symbolizes a soldier who either shed their blood or gave their lives for us. And it set me on a journey to find out everything I could about the man. And unfortunately, there wasn't anything. You know, we as a country have forgotten about these guys, specifically from World War One, World War Two, Korea. We got a little better in Vietnam, and we're kind of on point now, but this guy was just a name on an honor roll somewhere. And it basically took me a year to find that family. But long story short, we were able to return that medal, which wasn't supposed to be out of their hands, back to that family. And that's kind of how all this got started.
Okay. I mean, well, you know, what an interesting turn of events, right? To just, you know, your mom, you just came back. And I totally get it. I kind of came back, and when I came back from Afghanistan in 07, I kind of took on some hobbies that I'd never really done before, things that were just kind of more meaningful to life. And I think it's probably those kind of situations that cause you to do that. And in fact, I think I was probably over there when you were over there. I was over there in 2010 when I believe you were back over there. Were you over there on that tour when Vermont went over?
Yeah, it was. I was actually wounded on that deployment September 11th, 2010.
I was there on September 11th. Were you at Bagram?
The rocket that came to Bagram that landed in my bedroom.
Oh man!
What a small world! What a small world. Yeah. So I was over there. I was working for CERTIC, and I was me and Doug have a old joke about that, but I worked a lot with units before they went over, while they're over there back, working with engineers, getting them the new technologies and making sure they had a connection back to the engineers and knew how to operate it. And I had taken some engineers over to Afghanistan to field some equipment, which was a long lasting need from when I was there in 07, 06, 07. And we actually left on September 12th. So we were packing up, getting ready to leave. We were there for 3 weeks, and I was there. I remember when those rockets hit, and I remember when I had these young engineers, you know, that had, you know, civilians that had never been in a situation like that. But after their couple weeks, when the big giant voice came on, they went to running, and I was just outside with my pack on, and just like, yeah, what's the problem? you get kind of numb to it, as you know. But
yeah, as you know, they're not that accurate, but I was dead asleep at 3:30 when they came in, and I guess they met their mark that day.
They did. Well, I'm glad you made it out, though, okay, because I know that was a pretty big deal when that happened, like I said, because usually they hit the airfield or they shoot over or something like that, and it's it's rare for them to be, you know, really have any meaningful effect, right? But
no, it should have been worse. I don't know how a lot of us walked out of that room, and I'm just happy to be here. A lot of people a lot of people think we started this foundation because I have a Purple Heart, and that's not the case. You know, I started this before the deployment.
Wow, wow. Now, and that was right near Four Corners, wasn't it? It wasn't far from Four Corners.
Yeah, Disney Drive. You remember the big tower that sat right there? Basically a naming stake?
Yeah.
That's where it landed right there, basically.
Yeah.
So they hit their mark.
Yeah, that one they got on. But, yeah, so... So, yeah, we were around the same time. Then I went back as a civilian contractor. Completely different experience than being in the uniform, for sure. But, so interesting. So you said, you know, it wasn't because you had a Purple Heart. It was you had started it beforehand. And, you kind of found this one. You did the research. And then as you were getting big into antiques and stuff, did you start to stumble on more and more things and realize there was a need here?
Well, it's you know, when I came home from that deployment, you know, I had that medal, so that research process for that first one was delayed by that deployment. And when I came home, the medal was still sitting in my room, and, you know, I took it to the next level and was able to track down, you know, that family. And when I called that sister, well, she actually called me. I actually found her sibling. It was a large Italian family, and as you know, they're typically very close. And Corrado Piccoli, that's the veteran's name, he died 7 November 1944 in France. He was the oldest. So he was kind of the chosen one of the family. He was a legacy, if you will. And when he died, that family was completely destroyed. His wife, or not his wife, but his mom literally walked out on the front porch a week later and died of a heart attack. He had 8 brothers and sisters. So the father basically was working double shifts to support the family. So the kids didn't have that rock of their mother to kind of keep them in line. And because of that, those kids kind of grew up in their own world, and they kind of separated as a family. They moved all over the country. So by returning this medal, that sister, that oldest sister, so she was kind of in command when her brother died. She was forced to write all the letters to the Pentagon and ask those pertinent questions, you know, where's my brother, when's he coming home, things of that nature. She was essentially moved into the role of boss. And I remember the phone call, she basically berated me for 20 minutes on the phone. Who are you? How did you get this medal? What do you mean you have my brother's medal? Where do you live? And
yeah.
You know, here's a woman that's 90, you know. And she goes, I'm coming to your house tomorrow. And I'm like, where do you live? She's like, I live in New Jersey. I'm coming to your house. It was an 8-hour drive for her. And I thought she was crazy. And so me and my mom, I'm at my mom's house, and we're like, okay, Italian family, driving 9 hours to upstate New York. We're in trouble, right? You know, we're not going to survive through the night. And so we were a little nervous. The door literally rang the next morning, and they drove down through the night. And in walked the nicest lady you've ever met. And she sat down at the kitchen table and for 3 hours told us this great story about her family and how they immigrated from Italy and how much Corrado meant to the family, how much he meant to the community, and how much it destroyed that family to lose him. And I thought she was going to take the medal and leave, but she said, Zach, we never got an opportunity to memorialize my brother. We never got an opportunity to tell the world who he was, and we're going to do that. And she's like, I want to do a ceremony. So I said, okay, like today, you know, like I had no idea this was developing. And she's like, nope, we want to pick a summer month, because at that point it was kind of winter.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted all her family to travel in. And because they had never had a family reunion, because they had separated so many years ago, the family had kind of lost touch with each other. So being military, I knew I could fly in on a weekend. And of all dates, they chose a date that none of us knew the significance of, and they picked August 7th. If you're not familiar with that date, that's National Purple Heart Day.
Wow.
So August 7th rolls around, the whole family shows up, and I got to witness that Saturday before that Sunday was essentially their first ever family reunion. You know, ages 93 to 3 years old coming together for the first time as a family in meeting. And it was magical to stand back and witness that, that something as simple as a Purple Heart medal could bring a family back together again.
No, that's fantastic. I love that transgenerational, quasi-family reunion. And also, Zach, the other component that you don't hear of, if you're on Facebook or something, you'll read about some soldier who, on this date in 1968, did this. You hear the battlefield stuff, but like you said, you don't hear the family impact if that soldier did not return home, and what'd that do? Did he have a wife? Did he have a son? Was he the only son of a, so that is just, I just think that's, you're bringing in so many different elements here, pulling a much needed sort of family perspective, and you're showing the true humanity of these guys, what they did and where they came from before their military experience. So I think it's fantastic.
Well, in my opinion, they're the forgotten heroes. I mean, we do a great job in modern day. We have Snowball Express, we have TAPS. We have some wonderful programs out there, but we didn't have anything back then. These families got no recognition whatsoever.
Wow.
I mean, it was just, sorry for your loss, and move on. And
yeah,
that's just the way we were as a society back then.
Yeah, and maybe too, that's just sort of the negative side of maybe, if it's like a Korean War, especially World War II, the casualty rates were so great, even in Vietnam. I mean, so I think that kind of, maybe sort of numbed people down. Maybe they're in, and then so many devastating wars, generation after generation after generation, maybe just kind of, I don't know. I mean, maybe people grieved differently back then. Maybe that, I don't know. Again,
Doug, if you think about it, today we have all the social media and connectivity of always on connectivity.
Absolutely.
That when one of us loses a family member, we, you throw it on Facebook, push, tweet, shout, text your whole family and everyone knows. Think back then what it was to call someone or have to write a letter. So even though there were so many, so many millions of people and stuff that served, and so many hundreds of thousands wounded and killed through quite a few wars there, they just, some may not have heard about it forever, about Uncle so and so or Cousin so and so or whatever, now.
And those channels though, it's about people who care about it, but you don't really hear anything on, mainstream media about what's going on today in Afghanistan. I mean, once in a while you hear, some special forces guy was killed, on a mission or something. But, and sadly, I think it's a rarity. It's, you'll hear about it through some, Facebook page you like that deals with veterans or military or actual specific Army units. And they'll, some brigade of the 10th Mountain Facebook page will say, on this date, Sergeant so-and-so was killed in action, blah, blah, blah. But that's, that's stuff that, I'm interested in that I'd plug into because I care and I have some sort of connection to that. And, most civilians walking around, sadly, who don't have any kind of, military family experience or, it's a shrinking percentage of the population. I mean, somebody equated this to almost like Sparta way back then where you have this small cadre, if you will, of the society, and that, it's like my dad was in the Army, just like you, Zach, my dad was retired lieutenant colonel, blah, blah, blah. So that was my exposure and appreciation for my motivation largely for joining the Army as well. But, if I talk to my in-laws, they don't really have that, or it's, if they did, it's so separated by generations that they've kind of lost it or kind of like what we've been saying, they're ignorant. They just don't know. And maybe they would feel differently have they been given the information. And that's kind of where you come in again, fulfilling this, this big gaping void, for these families and for the soldiers who, like you said, are largely sadly just sort of forgotten. And, you're bringing these families together. And I think it's great, and they can appreciate not only what their family member did, but what's going on currently, you know, the conflict now.
And I can give you a great example of that. So when that first return was covered, don't hold it against me, but Brian Williams covered it on Nightly News. And
that's good. I'm
that
impressed.
That was 3 years ago, yeah.
Good.
I can promise you he didn't lie about my story. So
Well, good for him, man. At least he served some good, right? That's good to hear.
Yeah. So the next morning, we started fielding thousands of phone calls. You know, I had no clue you asked the question of, like, how did this kind of unfold? And we just started receiving these phone calls, and I fielded one out of Upper Darby, PA. So essentially a Korean War pilot from Michigan gets married right before the war. So 2 weeks before deploying, he gets married. Some soldiers still do that today. He goes off. Well, his wife was from Seattle, so he brings her back to Michigan to meet the folks. He deploys. Unfortunately, he doesn't come home. He dies. So she gets his medal because spouses have basically priority to those medals. And she's like, listen, I'm not from Michigan. I'm going to go home to Seattle. And she took that medal. She took the flag with her. In early 1961, the medal was found in a landfill in Upper Darby, PA, by a Marine World War II veteran. So he's basically the head of sanitation department. He's walking through a landfill, and he finds this medal on the ground. And, you know, he knows the meaning of it, so he takes it home. Well, back then, they didn't have the Internet. So all he could do was research the local phone book, and the veteran being from Michigan, obviously, he found no matches. So he basically threw this medal in a candy dish on his coffee table, and it sat there for two generations. You know, his son played with it, and then his grandson played with it. You know, they'd take it outside, they'd show their friends. I mean, it just stayed in this family until 2012. Hmm. And that grandson just happened to be watching that telecast and was like, hey, I got to call this guy. So I do the quick research, and the veteran sister, his only sister, older sister, Connie Bachman, lives in Lexington, Massachusetts. So I give her a call, and she said, hey, I want to meet you. Can you drive down? It's a short drive for me from Vermont. And, again, nicest woman you've ever met. 89, I believe she was at the time. Just to say his name, she would break down and cry. I mean, you could tell right away she loved her little brother. And I remember the conversation at the kitchen table. She fed me some soup. She fed me 8 bowls of soup. She wouldn't let me stop eating. typical grandma, right? So we set up a date for the ceremony. She had all of her kids there, all of her grandkids there. There must have been 45 family members. She got her hair done. She had this beautiful outfit. It was just her moment. I mean, she was grinning ear to ear because she got the opportunity to tell everyone how much she loved her brother. Ceremony was flawless. We presented the medals, and we kind of parted ways. About a month later, I got a phone call from her daughter, and she sounded really concerned. She said, Zach, my mom needs to speak to you. Can you call her? So I called her, and I could tell something was wrong right away. She could barely speak. And she said, Zach, I have throat cancer. She said, something I've had for quite some time, and it's just kind of hit me out of the blue. And she told me something on that phone call that I'll never forget. She said, you know, all my life I've had this huge hole in my heart. You know, I couldn't go to a 4th of July or Memorial Day or even look at the flag because it reminded me of the loss of my brother. All of my life I've lived in darkness, and I have been completely terrified of death. You bringing this medal back to me has brought me peace, and I'm no longer afraid to die. We cried on the phone. We said our goodbyes, and she died the next day.
So for me,
it was kind of like God reaching down and slapping me in the back of the head, you know, bringing a medal home. There's just something as simple as that medal could bring peace to a woman's life at her last moment.
Amen.
I haven't looked back since. I mean, this
right. That's,
yeah, if there's ever a driver, I mean, that's
motivation.
That's it,
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's, now and you, like I say, you haven't looked back since. Now you're busy, you got a full time job, you do this 501c3. How is it? You know, you've gotten the word out there. You know, you had the NBC News thing and all that stuff. But I mean, but it was after that when you started, really got the foundation going. How's it been? Because I mean, I'm very tuned in. with military charities and been very involved with them well before I retired and after. And I had never, and I've known Taco for a long time, but we'd never talked about it. I never even heard of you guys. And once I did, I was just astounded at what a great organization is. How has it been getting out there and reaching out to people, letting them know what you do?
It's a struggle. I mean, if you do the math, I think right now there's 55,000 active military-related nonprofits in the U.S., and then there's another 250,000 VSOs, Veteran Service Organizations. So there's 300 organizations out there competing for the same dollars.
Right.
And, you know, we're a mom-and-pop organization. I work here in Vermont out of my basement. We are struggling to compete with the big dogs, if you want me to be completely honest with you. We, at this point, it's the families carrying us forward. You know, when they see how much goes into a return, they're handing a check to Zach's. They're not handing a check to Zach's Flag. They're handing it to the next family. They're like, I can't believe how much went into this. This has kind of changed our life. We want the next family to experience the same. And I really struggle with that because I hate to see families giving up money. You know, there's great people out there that have the finances to support this mission. I think you're right. I think they just don't know about it yet.
Yes, yeah.
And I can sit here all night and tell you a story that literally would make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. I mean, we're doing something very special. You know, I'm an alumni of Wounded Warriors. I'm not going to get into that conversation tonight. Like, you know, I've taken advantage of some of their programs. You know, I went to see a Yankees game. And, you know, that was a great 2 hours of my life. But what we're giving these families, these frames that are now hanging on their mantles or their wall, they're going to be reminded of that loved one for the rest of their lives. And that's going to carry not only through their generation, but to the next, to the next, to the next. And I don't know how many organizations out there can say that.
No, you bring up a good point. I mean, we're not big fans, haven't been for a long time of WWP, because it's almost like them and everyone else. What it splits on like. But, you know, and there's other organizations out there that project themselves as being, you know, but there's so many and they have agendas too. But this one is just, you know, look, you know as well as I do, you know, when I was, even after I came back from Afghanistan, when I was over there, I was supported over there by some great organizations like Soldiers Angels and like Books for Soldiers and stuff, especially
right.
Books for Soldiers. And, you know, enough where the people got to know me and they would contact me and say, hey, I got someone that's asking for something in Afghanistan, because these civilians, these people just didn't know. And I'd be like, okay. And they're like, they're asking for this and cigarettes and blah and a PlayStation and blah. I'm like, where are they at? They're like, they're a Bagram. I'm like, no. I'm like, shut them down. I'm like, no. I'm like, they're just trying to milk you. I'm like, I was down on a pack border and we got so many care packages because I took the time to write back and thank the people. That's all they wanted to hear. And where any ETT team that came through, we had what we called the free store. It was just, we built these racks. There was so much stuff we had. We were like, hey, you're going down to KK or Wazikwar or somewhere else in Bermel. Grab whatever you want. You know, every sundry, toiletry, snack you could think of, we had. We're like, just grab it and go, because there's more here than we could ever use. Those kind of people, right? But there were so many that unfortunately try to take advantage of some of these organizations, individual citizens that were just using their own money to try to support the soldiers. And a lot of those, you know, some of those organizations out there have good intent. They've had from the start. Some had good intent at the start, now they don't. The reason why many of them are, I think, I want to say in the good of my heart, the reason why many are out there is because they want to do the right thing. I don't think a lot of them start not wanting to be facetious or wanting to be, you know, malicious or anything underhanded. But a lot of the reason why they're still there, I mean, that need just isn't there. But a need like this carries beyond the last boot that leaves a country, if that ever happens. I mean, this is something that, you know, you're returning medals from World War II and Korea and Vietnam and maybe even before World War II, World War I,
maybe.
You know, we've done every single campaign since the establishment of the medal. I mean, we actually had one of the original 137 Purple Hearts ever presented from World War I.
Wow.
And bottom line, I mean, we can get into finances. It's about $1,500 to do a medal return from start to finish. You have medal rescue. So believe it or not, these medals are being traded like baseball cards. There's about 3 million collectors across the country that are actively pursuing these medals basically for fun. They trade
like
them.
Baseball cards or something, yeah.
They sell them. The average guy, so Private Snuffy, killed in World War II, his medal is going to go for $300. If you can tie historical value to it, it just adds value. So, you know, we returned one of the original Band of Brothers medals, Private Joseph Martin. His medal assessed for $10,000 because of who he was and what unit he served with. So how these guys sleep at night is beyond me.
Oh,
I mean, they're literally making thousands of dollars off of our fallen soldiers.
Blood.
Just last year, we spent $50,000 in medal rescue. So that's me bidding on eBay, bidding on Craigslist, et cetera, rescuing these medals.
So that's how you're getting some of them. You're having to buy them to get them and then
you get them out of circulation,
It's 50-50. So it's based off metal rescue, and then the other 50% are like people finding them. And now that we're getting more well-known, they know we're that resource. So we'll get them donated to us. Hey, you want to return this? Okay, send it to us, and we'll get it done for you.
I heard about I heard even a dog found one for you.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite stories. 10 years ago, a little puppy digging in the backyard, about a foot down, digs up a medal. The owners didn't really know too much about medal, so they kind of, again, just threw it in the candy dish. And then literally were watching the news and saw one of our returns. That's typically how it happens. They read about us or they see something, and they reached out to us, and sure enough, it was a Korean War veteran, and we were able to find his daughter. And that dog became the first dog in our industry not only to find a medal, but to return it. The dog had it on a ribbon around her neck and walked up to the daughter, and she, you know, got down on a knee and took the medal off the dog's collar. So
that's fantastic.
But medal rescue, we get the medals professionally framed. We believe that it's the right thing to do to preserve these medals, or basically take it to the next step, you know. It's going to be harder to lose a framed set of medals than something loose. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
And it's the right thing to do. That's kind of the focal point of the return. Here's his medal. We go beyond just the medal. We get all the medals that the veteran would have been entitled to. His photo, a plaque, a flag. I mean, just beautiful. And then we got to get to the families. You know, for us just to mail that, it's not the right answer. I mean, that's what we did back in World War II. You know, we mailed the medal to them. We will travel to their hometown. We will hold a ceremony, which is very educational. It's about an hour long. We talk about the history of the medal. We get the family dynamic. We hear those stories that only they can share, which really paints the picture for everyone. Like, you really learn who he was, you know. He was a real person, and he had his whole life ahead of him, and he went off to war, and he didn't come home. It just makes it real. And then we do the presentation. So you factor in all those logistics, is about $1,500 per return. The problem is we can't keep up with it. We're getting 3 or 5 medals a week in the mail. Currently, we have 600 medals that we're researching.
Holy wow.
So that's where the Valor Guard came in with Mitch. I mean, he's been a lifesaver. We now have 30 guys, like-minded guys like myself, who are willing to stop what they're doing and go to these places for me. You know, before it was just Zach Fike, 35 returns a year, and we were able to double that last year thanks to the Valor Guard.
So that's what they bring in, and he's got a lot of those guys that are pilots, and are they? I want to understand if I remember what he said. You know, they're American Air, like they're flying on buddy passes to help keep the cost down to get the medals back to where they belong, or you know, they're getting miles donated, that kind of stuff.
Exactly, and I've been really efficient to get this,
to keep it going, really. I mean, I've invested my own money. I've got probably $100,000 of my own
money invested in this program, and it's not about the money. I spend it 10 times over because I get to see the family's reactions, and trust me, it's worth the money. I sleep in my car to save, you know, money from sleeping in hotels. I mean, we're cutting every corner that we possibly can. I mean, we're grinding at this point. And it is. It's frustrating because of all the foundations out there, I can tell you there's not many that can compete with what we're doing. We just need to get in front of the right people, and we need that help. We need that financial backing to keep this going.
Yeah, that's that is phenomenal. So you talked about the you know, you're doing a lot to save the money and keep it down. I'm sure your administrative costs are just crazy low. And you said some families give you money just to help out the next one. But how else are you trying to raise funds? Are you able to have? Are there been any events? Are there any events coming up to help raise funds to keep this going? And are you looking for anything besides just funds? Are you looking for help in administration or just so our listeners can
whatever,
know manpower of any other type?
So we broke it down. Right now we have the Valor Guard, which is about 30 volunteers. We're always looking for more guys that are willing to step up. And if you think about it, if we can team bigger and bigger over the next couple of years, we potentially could have a rep in every state, if not by region, by state. You know, so if I have one for Austin, Texas, I can give you a call and say, hey, I got a family that lives maybe 30 minutes from me. I'm going to mail this frame down to you if you can help me out with the return.
Right, right, exactly.
But it's finding the right people. I mean, you can't just trust this to anybody.
Right.
You know, it's got to be a military veteran. They've got to have... You know, I hate to bring rank into it, but it can't just be the average Joe. You know, you got to be comfortable standing in front of people, interacting with, you know, town leadership and dealing with a family. You know, it's kind of be like being a casualty assistance officer.
Yeah.
Right.
You got to have some training there. It's very emotional. You can't just be a wise guy, you know.
You got to have the right interpersonal skills without a doubt, right? For sure.
Exactly. And to be able to deliver our message. And then you have Valor Rescue. So we got guys that are out there actively pursuing and rescuing these metals for us. And then we have Valor Research. So we have hundreds of researchers across the country that are willing to devote their time to basically researching each metal and finding the family. So we've got a pretty good foundation started. It's just the financial aspect of that. I mean, literally, we have one employee. That's it. You know, I've never paid myself a single dime. I think of all organizations, like you said, our operational cost is through the roof. I mean, we're making a lot of impact with a little bit of nothing. We have a couple local events that we do every year, a golf tournament, a Calcutta. It's hard to do something on a national level unless you know somebody. You know what I mean?
Right.
We would like to see that, you know, hold an event in Texas or hold an event in New York. It just takes some growth and it takes it knowing the right people that are willing to come forward and help us out.
Yeah, and getting the word out. So do you have, like, social medias or something? You know, what can we do to at least, you know, help get the word out and maybe build a network, extend the networks to get to build this thing? Out.
Yeah, we have social media. We have a ton of videos that we can send you guys or link you to. I think the biggest problem we've had over the last 3 years is out of respect to the families, I wear my uniform. You know, I don't think it would be the same effect if I was doing it in a business suit. You know, when they see that young captain up there and looking sharp and military protocol, I mean, the families are just blown away. And I think that's actually hurt us. You know, when people watch that newscast and they see Zach Fike in uniform, what do they assume?
Right.
The military is doing the ceremony.
That's family like it because they feel like it's almost official or sanctioned.
That's
so
true.
So people assume the military is sponsoring us, and that's so far from the truth. So, again, I think it comes down to great Americans like yourselves, not only spreading the word, but just making that clear to people that, hey, these guys are a nonprofit. They need our help. And really right now, we only have a few hands that are helping us.
Right, right. Well, you know, that's one thing you did mention videos, and I was just wondering. I mean, you guys got so many great stories. I mean, I see a few videos up on your site. I haven't watched them yet, but look from the title. It looks like a few of them are the story, right? You're putting out there. You're making, like the dog digging up the one and stuff.
Yep.
Are those up on? Those are all on YouTube. So you have a channel on YouTube.
Yeah, we post videos as we get them. You know,
that's been a challenge for us too. You know, it's one guy traveling and
trying to do everything. And
right.
you guys have done military events. If you're emceeing, you're pretty much on point. You're talking to the general, you're talking to the mayor, whatever. You don't have time to run around with a camera, you know.
Right.
We are missing that piece of it, and it's really sad because we're seeing some great moments, and we've had a few where we've tried to reach out and maybe find a local photographer or find a local video guy to come, and they just don't understand what we're doing, or some guys will come and film, and then they don't send me the feed. You know, it's just been a struggle, but we do the best we can to capture those moments, and we'll post them right to our website.
Right. Have you guys? We only got a couple minutes left, so I want to real quick. I want to ask: have you ever teamed up, or you ever worked with any of the Patriot Guard riders in on any of these? Do they assist? Because
yeah.
You know, they assist with so much else.
We have. You know, typically when we do a return, we reach out to everybody,
and that's one of the things that I'm struggling with, or I'm
frustrated over, is all those military-related organizations. We never work together. You know, and when I do a return, I invite the VFW, I invite the American Legion, I invite the Patriot Riders, I invite the military or the Purple Heart, because together we can do a lot. And
right.
A lot of times they don't show up because it's not part of their agenda, you know. And
yeah.
It's like I used to give scholarships to families, and I just couldn't keep up with it. I reached out some organizations that do the same thing, and they weren't interested. You know, why are we competing against each other? We're all doing the same
thing. Should
be
working together. Yeah, and it seems like that's almost a need right there, is just an integrator for all these organizations to see where they can come together to help each other. That's amazing.
Yep.
So we
do our best. I'm surprised it's grown to this. I can't believe there's such a demand for this, but I'll tell you right now, there's thousands of medals out there that need a home, and we're the only ones doing this right now, and I look forward to basically doing this until the medals stop coming, and I don't know if that'll ever happen.
Yeah. Well, Zach,
wow.
I tell you, we're gonna do our best. I've checked out your channel. I'm going to share some not only on StuAndTheNun.com, but on my personal blog at BooHammer.com.
Right.
I'm going to try to help you get the word out there, and I definitely want to talk to you offline after this about some opportunities and maybe where I can do more than just share the word out there. But I want to thank you so much for – man, not only everything you're doing, and not only for your service, which any aspect of this is a phenomenal thing you've done. It's, you know, there's one of the tenets of this show, and this is selfless service, and you embody that 100%. And but so not only for doing that, for your service, for your own sacrifices, and doing this continued well beyond serving in combat, but also for taking the time to come on with us tonight and just letting us know. And you know, helping us to hopefully help you and these families, we really appreciate it.
Amen.
My pleasure.
God bless
you,
man.
Yeah, that's
thank
where it's
you so
good.
Much.
Yeah, that's where it's good to have good friends like Taco, man. You never know who you're going to know. It's all about networking, right?
Well, don't pump his head. Don't pump his head up too much. You know, Marine, so.
He won't be able to fit in that cockpit.
He won't be able to put his helmet on anymore. So
exactly, but. Well, hey, man, again, thank you so much for coming on. I'm definitely going to stay in touch, and we'll keep praying for your brother and hoping that, that you know, that something just comes out and somehow it gets provided where you can just keep this up and keep the fight going.
Right. I appreciate
God bless,
it. God bless both of you. Thanks for your service as well.
Thank
All right,
you.
Man. Thanks. Bud. Have
thank
a good
so
night,
much, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye. Oh, man, I knew he'd eat up. I just knew it'd take the whole hour, man. I knew the stories.
Oh, hey, it's a worthy cause.
Absolutely.
You know?
Great.
You
I wish,
just got to let it go, man, sometimes.
Show,
just,
yeah, this is the kind of show when I wish we were back. We're still an hour and a half or 2 hours.
An hour and a half, yeah, because we totally could have talked another 15 minutes at least and stuff. But, no, what a great guest, Troy. That was excellent. Excellent to hammer that home twice, you know, between him and Taco. I think that's important.
So I'm going to be definitely putting up some Purple Hearts Reunited videos, and you know, I'm going to talk to them, man, and maybe you know, kind of feeling it. I'll pray about it. I'm kind of feeling it in my heart that maybe if they need a rep in Western New York, maybe I could do that for them. So
yeah, I know. And there's a lot of that stuff floating around, man. You go antiquing anywhere, there's always military, you know, paraphernalia, medals, and uniforms. Now I'm going to look at it all completely different now. You know,
yeah.
So, wow.
Cool.
Shame
well, hey,
on
man.
Me for not thinking about it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's we're always learning, right? And God puts
Amen,
in front
brother.
What he wants us to see and hear. So,
Amen, brother.
Hey, thank you for coming on, Doug. Appreciate you joining.
You're welcome. Thank you. It's my pleasure, and thank you so much. It's my honor. So I appreciate you guys asking me to do this. Thank you so much.
Thank you to all of our listeners, and we will talk to you all next week, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern. Good night, everybody.
Take care, everyone. God bless.